Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 27, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. What's going on with me? I'm having a little bit of a setback. Still. And I have, on last Tuesday, my lower back seized up, unfortunately. I had a sore back, and I don't have a regular chiropractor yet. I am getting a new chiropractor in a couple of weeks, so I'll report on that once that happens. So I was feeling just the back soreness for a couple of days, and then last Thursday morning, I woke up with nerve pain. So the femoral neuralgia is back. It's not nearly as bad as it was. And so I am able to ride my bike, although I haven't ridden outdoors since the nerve pain kicked up. I have been riding on a trainer, and that's been okay. And I have been doing yoga, and that's been okay too. And so this time, when I move around, it feels better. The thing that's worst for it is sitting on my butt like I'm doing right now. So if I sit on my butt stressed for a long period of time, that makes the nerve pain worse. But it does respond to acupuncture. I had acupuncture and it was wonderful. And it responds to Epsom salt baths. And it responds to not sitting in an upright position. And it responds to rest, although sleeping, it does aggravate when I sleep because inflammation collects around the area. So the disc is probably still cranky. I'm looking very much forward to getting another acupuncture treatment later this week, and I'm looking forward to seeing my new chiropractor in a couple of weeks. So that'll be exciting. And the first appointment is very long. It's an hour and a half long. So I guess he's going to figure out what's going on with my body. And there's a lot going on, so I'm sure it will be very helpful. So I'll report on that when that happens. Topicals, I'm using comfrey oil. I'm using topical magnesium chloride spray that also happens to have arnica and lavender in it, which I like very much. I sometimes use Epsom salt lotion. So I have a lotion that has Epsom salts in it. And I especially use that if I haven't gotten a chance to get into an Epsom salt bath. And I do highly recommend getting into an Epsom salt bath and spending, you know, at least 20 to 30 minutes in there. And I listen to music when I'm in the bathtub. Or lately, I've been taken to listening to podcasts. And one of my favorite podcasts I like to listen to is Mayim Bialik's Breakdown. And the podcast I'm listening to on Mayim Bialik's Breakdown right now is Andrew Huberman. And he's really interesting. So I recommend listening to Andrew Huberman. Find podcasts by him. He's a neuroscientist, and he's all about the autonomic nervous system. So he has a lot of knowledge and science about that. And I'm listening to him speak, and he's very articulate, and he's very easy to understand. He's very smart. And he has a lot of great information. So you can go on to, you know, your favorite podcast site or go online and find Andrew Huberman. He's written books and he's got his own podcast and very interesting stuff. And if you want to calm your body down and heal yourself and help have your autonomic nervous system, your involuntary nervous system work in a way that's helpful for you, he's somebody to look at. So yeah, so I'm doing various things, more rest. I was very pleased because I had kind of a busy day yesterday, but I had a busy day with rest interspersed, and that worked. And I was very pleased because yesterday was, from Saturday night to last night, was the holiday of Purim, where we celebrate the Jews being freed from Persia long, long ago by one of the Xerxeses, who's known in Hebrew as Ahasuerus. So I ate Hamantaschen, the little triangular cookies, because that was the shape of Haman's hat. And I had one with prune, and I have one with moon. Somebody made one with chestnut, and I got gluten-free ones that have apricot and raspberry in them. So yesterday I had a regular one with prune and a gluten-free one with apricot. Good
That's
stuff.
That's nice, dear.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So yesterday was Purim, and I was able to do that, and I was able to go to the Bike Club Ice Cream Social last night, and I did fine, and that was good. And I had dairy-free ice cream. I supplied the dairy-free ice cream and also ate it, and that was nice. Digestion is going really well. It was not bad. So anyway, that was what was going on with me. And one of the things that's going to happen is I'm going to start taking cordyceps liquid extract this week, which I'm excited about. I'm taking a pill right now, a nice extract pill, but I'm going to start taking the extract starting tomorrow. And I'm psyched about that. It's from a good brand, and it's promoted by Paul Stamets, who is he's the mushroom herbalist. He knows all about mushrooms. So if you're interested in learning about medicinal mushrooms, it's a great thing to look at the work of Paul Stamets. And so anyway, so I'm going to do cordyceps extract that's going to help my immune system. I'm taking more things for tick-borne illness that are supportive than our antimicrobial. One antimicrobial I am taking is Sitta Acuta, and I'm taking it at low doses. And I think that since I started the Sitta Acuta, it's turned a corner. My energy is better, and I think I have less tremors. I don't have zero tremors. My left arm is a little twitchy today, but I'm taking Sitta Acuta at a very low dose. I'm nervous to take a lot of it because it has ephedrine in it, and ephedrine is it's a compound it's an alkaloid that's very stimulating. It's it's a bronchodilator. The herb mawang or ephedra has a lot of ephedrine in it as well. So it opens up your nasal passages and it opens up your blood vessels, but it can also, it's a sympathomimetic, so it can make your heart race and things like that. At the doses I'm taking, it's not doing that. And I'm even taking it in the evening and it's fine. And I'm wondering if I can take a little bit more. I'm going to experiment with it, but at the low doses, it seems to be helping. I really have turned a corner. I think it's that and probably the cumulative effect of the adaptogens I'm taking. So we talked about adaptogens. Adaptogens are herbs that help your whole body in general. So the cordyceps functions that way. Rhodiola, Eleuthero, and Sarsaparilla, which I may let go of because I was reading Buhner, and Buhner says that Sarsaparilla doesn't really clear Lyme. And I'm already taking Eleuthero, cordyceps, and rhodiola, so it's enough already. So I'm trying to back off on things. We're hanging in there, heading in the right direction. Big shout out to all my born on March 25th peeps from all the Rothbaums, my Uncle Michael and Aunt Gladys, may she rest in peace, and my cousin Laura and my cousin Robert, and then all my friends, Amber Pierce, Judy Borman, Lillian Fiddler, so many people born on March 25th. So if it's your birthday today, happy birthday. I consider you to be part of my family. Because March 25th is always a special day in my family because so many people had that birthday. Cousin Joni Felsen. Grandpa Harry also had that birthday. It was incredible. All these Aries people, all this Aries energy in my family. So happy birthday there. All right. So now let's talk to Ron about what's going on with him. So unfortunately, poor Ron is dealing with the effects of a cholesterol-lowering agent. So we can start with, you can update us on what's going on with you if you like.
You want to open that door, huh? It's a big one. yeah.
It's a health issue.
Well, it's a huge health issue. And I have been battling with a lot of muscular fatigue and cramps, like unbelievable amounts of cramps and other things that I was having trouble with when I was using the statin drugs. And so, you know, we had taken me off of statins, and I felt immediately better once I, well, it, well not immediate, 2 weeks after stopping taking statins, I went back to being my old self again, and I had lots of energy and lots of power on my bicycle, and I was riding my bike all the time. I was riding my bike to the community center, teaching a fitness class, riding back home. I was doing that a few days a week. I was very active and felt good, and my heart rate could get really high, and it wasn't a problem or a concern. Everything was going in the right direction, but my cardiologist felt that he was still concerned about my HDL-LDL levels and wanted to continue to treat that. So he switched me over to a drug made by Amgen called Repatha.
And Evolocumab, it's a PCSK9 inhibitor.
That's what it is right there. So, and that is supposedly, it helps you, I guess, draw the LDLs out of your body or...
Out of circulation. Yes, it stops the breakdown of... you have LDL receptors on your liver, and PCSK9 is an enzyme that breaks them down. And Evolocumab, and also the drug Praluent is another one. Liverocumab, something. Anyway, so there's a couple of drugs that do that, and Evolocumab is the one you're on. And it blocks this enzyme. So it blocks the enzyme from breaking down the LDL receptors on your liver. So the result is that there are more LDL receptors on your liver. And as the blood is flowing through your liver, it pulls LDL out of circulation. And that's how it lowers cholesterol. It does not block the production of cholesterol, just pulls it out of circulation. So there's less available to do whatever it is you need in your body that for cholesterol to do.
Right. So that moves me to having my cholesterol now dropped down to an all-time high since I was probably 18 years of age, and I currently have a total cholesterol of 150. And I have LDL of 59, which is extremely low.
Right.
Although my cardiologist really likes the European standard, which is 50, and which is even lower. He's very pleased with the numbers and what's happening. What I'm not so pleased about is how I'm feeling. And I was doing really good on this for probably about 6 months, pretty close to 6 months. Maybe five. And then I happened to notice that I was having some difficulty climbing stairs. And I'd get to the top of a set of stairs and my legs would just be throbbing in pain. And I would have to actually stop and catch my breath. And yet I looked at my heart rate and my heart rate was not accelerated in any way. So it wasn't really a heart issue. It was more of a muscular issue. And, but really it would be so painful. It would, I guess the best thing to say, it would take your breath away. That's the kind of pain I was feeling. Now I'm used to dealing with a lot of pain. I've ridden my bicycle a long time. I've been competitive on my bicycle. I know what it's like to feel that, but I never felt anything quite like this. So I made a decision to stop taking the drug because I went to my PCP and my PCP said, you probably should call your cardiologist and you should probably stop taking the drug. I went to the pharmacy and talked to the pharmacist about it to see if there was any kind of a change in the dosage that I was given or the manufacturer of it. And he said, no changes whatsoever. You should stop taking the drug and call your cardiologist. So now comes back to the cardiologist getting back to me and saying, let's just watch and see what happens. And that's where I'm at right now. So I was starting to feel better. I told Fran, oh my God, I made it all the way up to the top of the stairs. I'm okay. I can still feel it, but it's not nearly as bad. And so I decided that I would do this bicycle event this weekend, which I was working at, and I was supposed to be sweeping a 35-mile bicycle ride, which was a lot, but I've been in spin class for, you know, all winter long and have been struggling with that too. I've been keeping my heart rate relatively low because of the power loss that I've been experiencing since taking this drug. I lasted for less than a mile and a half on the bike ride before I made a very, I think, intelligent decision to just turn around and go back because I was not doing well at all. Again, severe pain, shortness of breath, all sorts of things that were not real good. So I decided to go back and I ended up helping in other ways for the event that day. I think I'm trying to get this out of my system and it's just not going out very rapidly. And that is where I stand right now. I'm unhappy. I guess that's a nice way of putting it.
So where do we go from here? Like when we're watching John Oliver, he tells you this awful problem and then he offers solutions. He offers ideas.
And now.
That's what we're going to do. Yeah, yeah. So what is actually going on? One of the things that we have learned is that for Ron, lowering cholesterol excessively is bad for his health. And so one of the things that we understand is that cholesterol is part of every cell membrane in your body. In order to rebuild cells, you need cell membranes. And in order to have cell membranes, you need cholesterol. Cholesterol is part of all of your cell membranes. If you don't have enough cholesterol, you can't rebuild cells. And Ron is very hard on his body. He was teaching spin classes, something like teaching 6 days nine fitness a week, classes yeah. a mm-hmm. week, and something like, and eight of them were spin classes. Eight. You were teaching eight spin classes a week, and now you're teaching a little bit less. Now you're teaching seven, right?
Yeah.
So he's very hard on his body, but on the spin bike, you can moderate. It's easy to moderate than if you're on terrain. If you're outdoors on terrain, you have to meet the terrain, whatever it is. And he was on a gravel ride that had how many feet of climbing?
Oh, it had lots of feet. That I didn't even get to that point. It didn't matter how many feet of climbing it was. So I was riding through soft, wet surface that was, you know, because it was very flooded around there. And I was trying to maintain, as I look back at my numbers, I was trying to maintain 6.9 miles per hour, and I couldn't stay with them.
Right. So it was different. It's different being on the spin bike because, again, it's much easier to control your resistance. You can control your resistance if you're on a virtual program, you can control it with gearing. And if you're on a spin bike, you can just control it with the lever or the dial. So it's a lot easier to control. When you're on the terrain, you have to pedal through the muck.
Whatever is
or
there
up the hill
in front of you.
Or
right.
whatever, exactly. Right. So you've got a different kind of resistance, and you've got the fact that you're propelling yourself forward. So it requires a different kind of muscle engagement. So he was not able to do it. And why, at my understanding, is because he's not adequately rebuilding his muscle cells. And so what we understand is that when you inject yourself with that evolocumab, it's in your system for at least a month after you do the injection. So you're overlapping. You're injecting every 2 weeks, so you're getting, you're having overlap. So you're having an increasing level of this evolocumab. So if it's staying in your system for a month, you're not taking the drug and then letting it completely leave your system, because it stays in you for a month. And so 2 weeks in, you take another dose. So you're sort of doubling your dose incrementally over time.
Right.
So the dose keeps going up and up and up. And you're a little person. And, you know, they, as you mentioned last week, they give you that there's one dose. There's one injection of evolocumab.
Right.
There's one injector. And it's you give the same dose to a 120-pound person that you give to a 220-pound person, which makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
One idea would have been to give it to you monthly or maybe every 2 months. But that was not done. And you were given the standard protocol of every 2 weeks. And it was fine until it wasn't. So, I mean,
it really was fine until it wasn't. I was doing really well with it. And I had a lot of power. I was riding my bike a lot. And I felt really good. And I can't imagine riding out of the driveway right now. That's
so it accumulated
it
over time. What I believe is going on is that the drug is probably still there to an extent. It hasn't completely left your body. It's depressing your cholesterol levels, and you're not able to rebuild your muscle cells. So what you need to happen is the drug needs to be out of your body so it stops depressing your cholesterol levels, and your muscles are probably depleted enough that it's going to take time to rebuild them. So in the meantime, the answer is to give it time, obviously, and then offer you, in the meantime, you have to eat protein. You have to
eat
plenty
of protein.
And, you know, and one of the proteins can be, if you tolerate whey protein, that's a good one, because whey protein is very absorbable. It has great amino acids in it. It has branched chain amino acids in it. By the way, you're taking separate branched chain amino acids?
The green stuff?
No. No, branched. If you're not taking separate branched chain amino acids, you should be dumping that in your shake as well. And
I don't know. You haven't instructed me.
Yeah.
So
at some at
we'll
one
talk
point
about that. Yeah.
At one point we were giving you. So branched chain amino acids are leucine, isoleucine, and valine, and they are the main essential amino acids that help you with muscle building. And whey protein has a lot of valine, leucine, and isoleucine in it. But if you take branched chain amino acids, concentrated branched chain amino acid, that may speed your healing. As you're trying to use these depleted muscle cells, you're probably creating some inflammation. And we've got you on we've got you on resveratrol, and we've got you on curcumin to help to deal with the inflammation. So you've got those on board. So the other thing that's going to happen is you need time.
Yeah.
You just need time.
Well, the other side effect I'm dealing with, too, are severe cramps.
Right, because you're trying to use muscles that don't have adequate cells in them. So what's happening is you're not getting good signals. The nerves are going to cells that are not fully built. And the other possibility is you could, now we know that statins cause you to leach calcium from your muscle cells. I'm not sure if PCSK9 inhibitors do that as well. So your muscles may be depleted in calcium, and it might be a good idea for you to take a CalMag supplement. So right. I might give you that.
And the only other thing that showed up on my report that is of concern is my low sodium levels.
Right. And
which
so,
is apparently a family thing, because Susan has the same problem.
Yeah, for that, you can either drink licorice tea or take licorice, and you should also just, salt the taste.
I salt everything heavily. Okay. I really do.
So
I
that's
mean,
fine.
To a point where I worry about that, but apparently I don't need to worry about that.
No,
because my levels
are super low. Blood pressure. If you don't have salt-sensitive hypertension,
I don't have high blood
pressure. Don't
worry
about it.
I check that occasionally, too.
So, so don't worry about that. But this is going to take time. It takes time for your muscles to rebuild, unfortunately. And in the meantime, when you exercise, you don't want to push yourself to the point of pain. You have to listen to your body and only exercise at that level. And obviously, riding on the road in muck, you can't do that right now.
Yeah.
But you can ride on a spin bike. And you probably shouldn't be overdoing it. Anyway, what you need to do is listen to your body. So it's very frustrating. One of the things I think we have learned is that for Ron, lowering cholesterol that much is not helpful for him.
No.
And so the thing is, they offer statins and they offer cholesterol lowering agents because somebody has high cholesterol. They're doing it for cardiovascular risk. So even when somebody has low cholesterol, if they have cardiovascular risk, they're concerned about that. So they give it to people with low cholesterol too, and that's why they're giving it to Ron, because they're concerned about his risk, because he's post coronary artery bypass graft. So people who don't necessarily have high cholesterol get these drugs, but some people, not everybody. I spoke to somebody last night who was in his 70s and is an avid athlete, and he's taking 80 milligrams a day of atorvastatin. He's fine. So depending on your genetics, you respond to these drugs differently. It varies how you respond to these drugs. And Ron does not have a good response to these drugs. You probably have an SLOC gene anomaly that makes this happen.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Should I be doing a genetic profile, like a 23andMe or whatever?
You can.
Would that help in any way?
Specifically,
is that something that's useful?
Well, specifically, you could do 23andMe if you want, but and that would give you lots of information. But what you specifically might want is that there's an SLOC3 gene test that you can do, and your cardiologist may be able to order that.
Okay.
So you should talk.
We'll have to write that down.
All you have to say to him is, "Can you give me the genetic test for cholesterol intolerance?" And he should know what it is. If he doesn't know what it is, then we'll. I can't imagine that he doesn't know what it is. He must.
Right.
So that's one way to approach it. So one of the things is that there is controversy on whether so many people should be getting statins. It is the position of the American Heart Association and the CDC and WebMD, and a lot of your standard promoters of health talk about how it's really necessary for a lot of people to take statins, and they're not just giving them to people who have high cholesterol. They're giving to them, but they assess their cardiovascular risk and then they offer them. And so many more people I've read a statistic that the increase in prescription of statins, now I know that Ron wasn't on a statin most recently, but the increase in the prescription of statins has gone up like 600% from from 1986 to 2016. It went up like 600%. And one of the reasons was because of this cardiovascular risk assessment. And the other reason was because they lowered your LDL. The LDL reference range used to be 130. Lower. Yeah. And now it's 100. That's 100 for everybody. So if you're over 100, so your cholesterol comes in at 115, which used to be not a big deal, you're going to get offered statins.
Right.
So your LDL. If your LDL comes in over 100 at all, your doc's going to offer you statins.
Right.
And so that means tons of people are on statins. Big money for the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
Although a lot of the statins are off patent. So they're generic. I don't know of any statin that is still on patent because they're all over 17 years old. Evolocumab came onto the market, I believe, in 2015. So we are not 17 years into this. It came out. So I don't know when it
really
got its patent.
It's expensive also. It's very, very expensive.
So not everybody has access to this drug, which is interesting, but your insurance covered it. I had a patient who had to go off it because his insurance covered it, but with a $600 copay. So he said, I'm not doing that.
Right.
I mean, you can get a nice car for that
copay
money.
Means that they were paying 50% and then he was paying the other 50%.
Right. So not everybody has access to this drug. Right. So the other interesting thing is there's some controversy about how much cholesterol lowering helps you. And the studies on statins, patients get told that they have a 36% decrease in risk of major cardiac events if they take a statin. That, and what they're not told is that is the relative risk, that if you take a statin and you're a healthy person, you have a major cardiac event risk of about 2.5% of getting specifically an MI, a heart attack. Statins will take you down to 1.1%. So the relative risk, that's about 36% drop. But the absolute risk, if you subtract 2.5 minus 1.1,
it's a lot less.
That you get one and change.
Yeah.
So your absolute risk doesn't go down very much. The other thing is that Uffe Ravenskopf, who was somebody who studies cholesterol, is a Danish researching physician. And he asserts that he did a lot of meta-analysis, where he looked at a lot of data from a lot of studies, and he discovered that that LDL has an inverse relationship with cardiovascular risk with age. So what that means is the higher cholesterol is as you age, the lower your risk is. That was his meta-analysis. And he found that there were studies where they were looking at placebo versus drug in some statin studies. And they found that the people in the statin studies were having higher risk of cardiovascular events than people in the placebo group.
But as you get older, your cholesterol goes up.
Yes, it does.
It's kind of a common part of aging.
Yes, it is. It does go up. But what he figured out was that people with higher cholesterol as they get older have less risk. No, it mattered. They have less risk.
They have less risk.
Yes. And why would that be? Can you hazard a guess?
I can hazard a guess that maybe your body is trying to protect itself as you're getting older.
Very good.
And
that's
just
exactly
like
right.
Like a lot of people gain weight as they get older because your body is kind of storing up for the big event of any kind to be able to protect you should you have any incidents as you get older.
Right. So why would it be an advantage to have more cholesterol as you get older? You have a more difficult time rebuilding cells as you get older.
It's harder to keep your muscle structure up.
And your everything structure up. Your body's going to make more cholesterol trying to repair itself. And if you lower that, the older you get, the less ability. You're lowering an ability to repair yourself even more. So rising cholesterol may be an advantage. And the reason is because, like I said, cholesterol is part of every cell membrane in your body. And you need to rebuild your cell membranes. And if you don't have adequate cholesterol to do that, you can't rebuild your cells. So in your case, you're using your skeletal muscles to excess, as an athlete, and you're unable to rebuild them. people who don't have problems. So people like the gentleman I talked to last night, he's able to override that, and apparently he's able to keep enough muscle cells and to keep him out of pain. And you are not. It just works very effectively in lowering your cholesterol. When your cholesterol is too low, your body doesn't rebuild itself real well. I mean, your body is one that doesn't hold on to a lot of stuff anyway. I mean, you process stuff and it comes out, which makes it so that you have to eat a lot and you have to rest a lot and you have to replenish a lot.
Right.
And, you know, your body doesn't hold on to things. So if we lower a building block so I mean, you're much more likely to because you have such a high metabolism, you're much more likely to consume your muscles than I am because I have a slower metabolism. Mm-hmm. If we then take away a building block for you to be able to do that, you're going to suffer more than somebody who has a slower metabolism.
Well, it certainly isn't right. Hey, can we do a flashback to 3 years ago? So how do I end up with all these clogged arteries?
Well, you have a genetic component to it.
Right, but does that have anything to do with the cholesterol in my body?
Oh, well, that's hard to say, again, right. Because...
I think it's a good question.
Cholesterol, if you didn't have particularly high cholesterol, then it probably didn't. You have a risk of cardiovascular disease does not necessarily equal cholesterol level, unless you have familial hypercholesterolemia, that you have a gene that makes you make lots of excess cholesterol, and people like that, those are the people who really need statins. So somebody who has a, without working very hard at it, they have a total cholesterol of over 300, and they have a total LDL over 200, which you don't have, and I don't have.
No, never had. No.
So that's familial hypercholesterolemia. That's who needs statin drugs, because you lower it to something reasonable, and they still have enough cholesterol to repair themselves, and they don't have so much cholesterol for it to become oxidized and damage your cells. So that's the other issue. If your cholesterol is oxidized, it's more of a problem because it's running around your body trying to repair things. And if it's hitting tissues, it could be breaking them down because it's oxidized. So the way you prevent oxidation is not by lowering cholesterol, it's by lowering oxidation. And you lower oxidation with things like resveratrol, green tea, the extract of green tea, EGCG, curcumin, fish oil. So you reduce inflammation. Well, fish oil isn't so much an antioxidant as it is anti-inflammatory. And fish oil, essential fatty acids, are also part of all of the cell membranes in your body. So our approach to helping you is going to be to help to replenish, to reduce inflammation, because as you're using those muscles and they're behaving inadequately and rubbing against each other, you're probably producing some oxidative stress. So we're helping you we're giving you resveratrol and we're giving you curcumin to help with that. I also gave you a great big compound of vitamins and minerals that help to escort excess plaque out of your body. And we don't know how well that's going to work, but that's what that compound is for. And it's got essentially a multivitamin and some minerals in it, and then some detoxifying enzymes in it, like I think there's some cysteine and methionine and maybe some NAC, N-acetylcysteine. There's a few detoxifying enzymes, as well as a bunch of vitamins and minerals to keep things out. And there's a little bit of EDTA, and taking EDTA orally, EDTA is a chelator, so it chelates out excess minerals. So the idea is that it will chelate out excess calcium from your blood so that you're less able to make those atherosclerotic plaques.
Right.
And so the other thing is, long time ago, 10-15 years ago or something like that, you had a test to see if you had heavy metals on board, and you were found to have a good deal of lead and mercury in your body.
Yes, it was.
So those heavy metals can also lead to cardiovascular disease because they cause oxidative stress. So we may need to address that. So one of the ways, so what we should probably be doing is offer you modified citrus pectin, because that would be a gentle way to help to chelate you. So you probably need some branched chain amino acids to help to rebuild your muscles, and you need some modified citrus pectin to go into the shake to help to chelate out excess metals. So we'll get you on. So I have
And this, folks, is why you have a naturopath on board.
Yeah.
Because yeah. they see things differently than the standard, you know, medical world does.
Yeah.
And not that there's anything wrong with the standard medical world. Nothing at all. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be here talking to you today without them. But at the same time, there are other opinions out there that should be shared.
Yeah.
I wish that I could sit you down with my cardiologist for an hour and let you guys just hash this out.
Maybe
that
I should go with you to the cardiologist at some point.
It's a possibility.
If you want, for sure. I don't know if he'll have the time to sit and talk to me, too.
Yeah, well, that's the question.
Does he want to?
He would, or that's the next question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that, was it your cardiologist or your, it was your primary, whose name is Haman?
Yeah, not. He gets that all the time, by the way.
Right. Well, he has Jewish patients.
Yeah.
And he probably gets it a lot now because it was just Purim.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's very funny.
I know.
So I'm proud of him.
But he's not angry.
No.
And he's very nice.
And he doesn't want to kill all the Jews.
No. He's a super nice guy. I really like him a lot.
It's hilarious that his name is Haman. Oh, my goodness. So Jewish people come in. One year you went to him and I sent a Humantashen with you.
Yeah.
Which was very fun. And he knew right what it was right away, which is very impressive. Anyway, the reason we're talking about Dr. Haman is because he ordered your CPK, your creatine phosphokinase.
Right, right.
And if your creatine phosphokinase is elevated, it can mean that you have muscle breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
So he did the test, and CPK wasn't elevated.
No, it was fine. I was right in the normal mid-range.
Yes,
no
and you
problem.
were disappointed about that. But,
yeah.
But you don't. You have. So probably what's going on is you have more muscle breakdown than you have muscle inflammation.
Right.
So that's an indicator of muscle inflammation, that you're dumping creatine phosphokinase into
your
blood.
Right.
But so...
So that part's good news.
You're not particular...
How do we find out if I'm having muscle breakdown other than...
We are assuming you're having it. You are. You're not able... We know that you're not rebuilding your muscle cells. That's why you're having all the symptoms that you're having.
Right.
And we just have to hope that this drug gets out of your body at a decent... That's why I also gave you milk thistle.
Right.
The milk thistle is to help to kick the drug out of your body. I don't know if it will work because
I'm taking that stuff every day. So.
Right. So that should... we're hoping that will hasten its exodus from your body.
I just want my body back.
You could also do saunas. And what you could do is sit yourself closer to the... if you want to do an inexpensive... saunas, just go downstairs.
Hanging out by the wood stove.
Exactly. To close enough so that you sweat.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're getting some infrared benefits from that wood stove.
Right.
Yeah, just to make you sweat. And that way you could get yourself to sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can get yourself to sweat without exerting yourself.
But we're going to figure this out, right?
So we're going to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, we're working on it.
I really need to ride my bike.
Of course.
For all sorts of reasons.
I need to ride my bike, too. Mm. So I'm looking forward to my next... I'm hoping that I'm on the outside of this, post-vaccine syndrome, Lyme, Bartonella. And I know I'm not completely out of the woods yet because I'm not completely twitch-free. Now I have this, my back is out of alignment and I unfortunately am not going to be realigned until April 8th. That's 2 weeks from today. Oh, well, but what are you going to do?
Just relax and keep doing the things you're doing.
Yes.
So, anyway,
keep calm.
Leave you to your...
All right, sure, you can do that.
This will be my exit.
Okay.
I'm just going
to
go in the other
So we
right
have
back.
A few more. We have a little while longer to talk about some other things. One of the things I was mentioning was cordyceps. And cordyceps is a neat herb. It is a mushroom. And it's an interesting mushroom because cordyceps grows. It initially grows on a caterpillar. But when you get cordyceps from the store... It's usually not grown on a caterpillar. It's usually grown on another fungal medium. So no caterpillars are destroyed in your... It's just so weird. When you see pictures of what cordyceps looks like growing out of the caterpillars, it's very weird. These poor caterpillars are no longer with us, and they have this long, what looks like a pod growing. It really looks kind of like a vanilla bean pod, a very long vanilla bean pod. It's very disturbing. You don't want to be a caterpillar with cordyceps growing out of it. And if you're vegan... You don't want to get that kind of cordyceps. You want to get the cordyceps that's grown on a culture medium. So we had gone through three benefits of cordyceps. The first one is that it can produce, it can boost exercise performance. The next one was that it has anti-aging properties. And the third one is that it has anti-tumor effects. So we already talked about those. So let's go to number four, which is that it can help it has a special type of sugar that can help to treat diabetes. And so diabetes is where you're either insulin resistant or you don't produce enough insulin. So glucose can't get into your cells, so it stays in your blood. And then you, if you have too much sugar in your blood, then it causes glycation. And it gets to a point where you are, where you're getting damage to the cells because sugar is attaching itself to protein in your cells. So you want to control your blood sugar levels. And cordyceps can help keep your blood sugar in a healthy range because it mimics the action of insulin. So cordyceps has been shown to decrease blood sugar levels in mice. And it could also help to protect against kidney disease, which is great because my doc was a little concerned that my kidney function is a little bit low. I noticed that my GFR is lower than a lot of my patients, my glomerular filtration rate, which is a measure of the how fast blood is being filtered through your kidneys. But I also find that if I make sure to hydrate well before I get a GFR test, my GFR goes up. And I tell my patients that if their GFR is low, before we assume that they have kidney disease, I mean, depending how low it is, if their GFR is sitting in the 20s, they have kidney disease. But if their GFR is 55, then I say, let's not worry about it yet. Let's do your GFR again, but this time I want you to pound water before you go. Because a lot of times people are dehydrated when they go get their blood drawn. So anyway, if you have a slightly low glomerular filtration rate and then you drink a whole bunch of water and then it goes up considerably, which mine does, then I don't worry about it. I still have kidney function. I do like to do things to protect my kidneys. One of the things you can do to protect your kidneys is to drink yellow pea protein. And I have not been drinking yellow pea protein as frequently. I tend to drink, I'm doing bone broth protein because I wanted that to help to rebuild my gut. And it does sit in my body nicer than the yellow pea protein. Although I have yellow pea protein occasionally. And what's been happening is we have a new smoothie place in town that we've been going to every couple. And I don't go there very often. I go there a couple weeks. It's not cheap. But when I go there, I ask for vegan protein and they give me yellow pea protein. So I when I get the protein shakes, that's what I get. But you don't. When I get you your protein shake, I give you. Now, if we're sharing a protein shake, it's all vegan. But if not that I am vegan, I'm just dairy intolerant. And I'm mostly dairy intolerant. It's not as bad as I. And right now, in terms of gluten, I'm not doing too badly with gluten. And what's terrible is I do worse with really good for you gluten, like gluten with a lot of fiber in it. So you know, whole heritage rye and heritage wheat, I can't do. But blacho white flour, I do okay with. And that is probably because there's more gluten in whole grain flour. The gluten is mostly in the bran, and so when you remove the bran, the product has less gluten in it. It still has the potential to raise your blood sugar and do some other things, there's wheat germ agglutinin is in, and that's another problematic molecule that's in wheat, and that's in the bran. And you, if you have white flour, then you don't have to deal with that. So I'm able to do a cookie here and there. So I had a regular Humantash yesterday, and I have a occasional regular cookie from the bakery. But if I'm going to eat a sandwich, I don't keep gluten bread in the house anymore because I just don't seem to do well with it. All right. So we're getting back to cordyceps. There's benefits for cordyceps on heart health. And in China, cordyceps has been approved for the treatment of arrhythmia, where if you have a heart rhythm issue, cordyceps can help with that. And there was a study in rats with kidney disease and found that injuries to the heart from kidney disease increased the risk of heart failure, so reducing the injuries helped that outcome. And there's adenosine in cordyceps, and adenosine has heart-protecting effects. And by the way, when you consume caffeine, you block your adenosine receptors, so your adenosine can't bond, so you don't have the benefits of that. Now, if you do well with caffeine and you feel fine from it and it doesn't particularly make you tired, there's a lot of antioxidant and other benefits to coffee and to tea. But if you don't do well with it and you block your adenosine, there can be cardiovascular issues with that. So there's also animal research that shows that cordyceps can reduce LDL. So that's interesting. And I think that would be a safer way to lower LDL than to take one of these pharmaceutical medications. And it's not going to drop it as much as any drug. So I've never seen an herb precipitously drop cholesterol, but it might drop it enough so that it's in a more healthful range. And it lowers triglycerides. Remember, triglycerides are the form that fat takes when it's floating around in your bloodstream. And if you have too much triglycerides, like LDL cholesterol, they are prone to oxidation. And so if you have too much triglyceride, you're more prone to atherosclerosis. So if you take if you take cordyceps, it can help to lower your triglycerides. The best thing to lower triglycerides is to watch your starch and sugar and to get regular cardio exercise. But there's some things you can ingest that can help. Cordyceps is thought to help fight inflammation. Some inflammation is necessary to life. That's how you rebuild tissues, and that's how your immune system works. There's some inflammation suppression when you take cordyceps. So it can help with general inflammation in your body, which is why I'm taking it for my Lyme and Bartonella. So the ongoing inflammation that you wind up having with these illnesses can be helped by cordyceps. And Buhner is a fan of cordyceps. So Stephen Buhner, who's the big herbalist for Lyme disease, he's a big fan of cordyceps. You can use cordyceps topically on skin inflammation. So it's just a really nice anti-inflammatory thing. And it's difficult to harvest. So like I said, most of the time when you get cordyceps in the U.S., it's synthetic. So it's cordyceps CS4. And you want to make sure you get cordyceps that has the NSF, either USP or NSF seal. And so when you're getting synthetic cordyceps, you're not getting the kind that comes from caterpillars. You're getting the kind that's grown synthetically. So it seems to be relatively safe. It's well known in Chinese medicine, used for a lot of health benefits. There's not so much research in humans, but there are good studies on, there are good animal studies on it. And you have to figure out a dose that works for you, and you can talk to your friendly practitioner for that. Okay, so that's all about cordyceps. Now I wanted to talk about Sitta acuta. So Sitta acuta is an herb that I am taking right now. That seems to have helped to turn a corner in my treatment of tick-borne illness. And Sitta acuta, it's usually used to treat malaria and also Lyme disease. And it's helpful for liver health, and it's antibacterial and anti-ulcer. And it can be found in cultivated fields and waste areas. It can be found on the roadside. It's often seen as a weed, but it's also used medicinally, especially in Central America, Africa, and in India. The Latin name is Sitta acuta, as we said, and it's also known as Seng in some parts of the world, S-E-N-G-H, Seng. There are bioactive constituents, including cryptolepine, which I'm assuming is also in Cryptolepis, which is a different herb, which is also used for tick-borne illness. And the nice thing about Cryptolepis is that it gets inside cells. So if you have Bartonella hiding inside your cells, it can get in there, and cryptolepine will also get inside. If you have persister cells of Lyme disease, it'll help to get rid of those. So it has a lot of, there is ephedrine in it. One of the concerns, I was concerned about taking it because it has ephedrine, because ephedrine is a stimulant, and it's a sympathomimetic. And I was afraid that I would get wired from it, but I haven't become wired from it. I'm not taking a high enough dose for that to happen. So it has a lot of nice compounds in it. It may treat Lyme disease and Bartonella, which is why I'm taking it. And Lyme disease expert, well, Stephen Buhner, has an herbal protocol for treating Bartonella, and Citric acute is one of the main herbs used because of its broad antimicrobial activity. It also helps to treat Lyme. And what I read in Buhner's book is that Citric acute is good for tremors, which is one of the main symptoms I have of this condition right now are tremors and marked fatigue. My fatigue has improved in the last couple of weeks. Still get it readily, but my energy has gone up in the last couple of weeks. And again, I'm not sure if that's because I'm taking a lot of adaptogens, the spirulina, chlorella, Eleuthero, Sarsaparilla, Rhodiola, and Cordyceps. So I'm taking a bunch of things to help with that. But I'm also taking this. I really feel like since I started the Citric acuta, I've turned a corner, and I may be killing some microorganisms because with that happening. Citric acuta is used for treating malaria, and there was an in vitro study where they looked at Citric acuta against the malaria, the Plasmodium falciparum malaria. And they think it's because of the alkaloids and that it has these antiplasmodial effects, and it's seen in vitro, and they think it's the cryptolepine that does this. And I'm wondering if cryptolepis can be helpful for this as well. It is antimicrobial. It's thought to be antimicrobial. It can kill Staph aureus, Bacillus subtilis, and Strep faecalis. So it can kill some microorganisms. Some other microorganisms besides just tick-borne illness and malaria. And there was also a study showing Citric acuta fought against Staph aureus. Staph aureus is the bacteria that sits on your skin. So when you get a little cut on your skin and it gets a little red, there's Staph aureus in there. If you get impetigo, which is where if you get a rash and then it becomes infected with bacteria that live on your skin, that impetigo is a Staph aureus infection. And so other researchers found that it goes after various staph species, Bacillus cereus, Listeria, and Enterococcus and E. coli. So it'll go against some intestinal pathogens as well. And then it helps to support healthy liver function. So it can decrease liver biomarkers like alkaline phosphatase and bilirubin specifically. It doesn't say here whether it protects against elevated AST and ALT, which those enzymes go up if you have liver inflammation, but it doesn't say that it helps those. But you will see lowering of alkaline phosphatase and bilirubin. It's possible that it helps with diabetes, that it helps with cholesterol and blood sugar lowering. There were animal studies on it. It may have nephroprotective properties, which means it's good for your kidneys. I can always use help for my kidneys. Neuroprotective and anticonvulsant, which is why I'm taking it for tremors. It has an impact on the central nervous system, that it helps with anxiety, convulsions, and it's sedative. So I may increase my dose a little bit. May also be anti-ulcer. There was a study where they compared it to famotidine. So famotidine is something you can get easily over the counter at your local drugstore. And famotidine is an H2 blocker. So it helps to block the histamine 2 receptor, which is involved in the production of hydrochloric acid. And Citric acuta compared favorably. And it's going to work. If it's going to help ulcers, it's probably not because of acid blocking, but because it's anti-inflammatory, because what's doing it is the flavonoids, tannins, and there's some steroids in it, and triterpenoids. So it's working to reduce inflammation. Tannins reduce inflammation, but mostly because they're astringent and antimicrobial, so they're going to suck out inflammatory compounds. So that's interesting. All right, so Citric acuta has been tied to a wide variety of health benefits. There are a lot of clinical trials that are needed to verify these findings, and it's very interesting. As we said, it does have minimal amounts of ephedrine, which can cause restlessness. So if you're taking something that already wires you out, you want to be careful with that, or if you're just very sensitive to those effects. That's why I'm being careful with it, because I'm very sensitive. You shouldn't use it during pregnancy if you're trying to conceive, because it is an abortifacient, and that means that it can cause you to lose your baby. So don't do it if you're trying to get pregnant or if you're already pregnant. And there's no information about whether it's okay to take during lactation. And you would have to talk about, you have to talk to your practitioner about that if you're thinking that you need to use it. It's a mallow, so it's in the same family as marshmallow. And marshmallow is a very benign herb and doesn't have ephedra in it. It's a very benign, benevolent plant that's very soothing. It's also used for healing ulcers, so it may have some of the same compounds there. It's a pretty little flower. All the mallows have pretty little flowers, often yellow. And so Sidda acuta is a perennial with little yellow flowers, and it can be solitary or in pairs. There are other Sidda genus species, and Sidda cordifolia is also used, and it's used in some various ways as well. So there's a lot of Sidda species. It's been used for thousands of years. Indigenous peoples have used it for rheumatic conditions, for low sperm counts, for sciatica, which I don't have sciatica, so I have femoral neuralgia. So it'll probably work for that too. Nervous and heart diseases, colds, coughs, asthma, a whole bunch of nice things. In Papua New Guinea, they chew on the fresh root for dysentery. Dysentery just means something that's wrong with your intestines. And then in Nicaragua, they drink Sidda acuta tea for asthma and fevers and aches and pains and all kinds of stuff. And in Cameroon, they believe the whole plant is anti-inflammatory, anti-rheumatic, helps you to sweat more, it's sedative and calming. And they use it for snake bite in Colombia and India. And in Central Americans also use it, make a poultice out of it. So it's cooling, it's astringent and tonic. I find the tincture pleasant tasting, so I'm kind of excited about it. So it's been used traditionally for thousands of years, various ailments. It's good for Lyme disease. It's good for Bartonella, particularly for Lyme and Bartonella. I don't know about for Babesia and Anaplasma and Ehrlichia and Rickettsia, but definitely for Lyme and Bartonella. So I'm taking it now. And obviously you should always consult with your physician if you're going to take it. All right, so that was all about Sidda acuta. So we talked more about damage to us from Ron's situation. We'll update you more on what's going on with Ron next week, see if he's gotten any better and has been able to get out and ride his bike on the road. And we'll update you more on any Lyme things that happen. Next week, we're going to talk about post-exertional malaise. So I'm intending to get to it next week. So anyway. So I'm going to sign off now. Thank you so much for listening. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.